You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
My name is Carrie Walker, and I'm going to be talking to you about both the mental fog and overload that we experience as mothers. Here's my family. I'm a mom of three, and this is the best picture I have to offer. You can't see one of my kids. There's a stranger in the background. Yeah, I'm doing my best. So we have three kids. My husband and I, Luke, have been married for 14 years, and our kids are 11, 9, and 5. So I am not a neurobiologist or a counselor, but I am a mom, and I have a brain. So that's what I have to offer this morning. And that really is kind of brings me to what the goal is this morning. I am not here to pass out college credit or to certify anybody in anything, but rather just to kind of begin this discussion. I think this is a topic that people don't talk about very much. And so I've done a little bit of research. I want to help everyone understand the changes that are occurring in our brains as women when we become mothers, and then also just kind of gain a few ideas of how we cope with these two different brain states. I want to start by laying out these qualifiers. The first is that I am not an expert. I've already said it once, so I'm going to keep saying it this morning. Yeah, I'm not an expert. I'm not pretending to be, and I don't want to be treated that way. But yeah, I'm just like you. I experience mom brain. I haven't figured this out completely, but I have done a little bit of reading on this. Secondly, I want to be very clear that what we're talking about this morning is changes that occur that fall within the normal range. So what I mean by that is that what we will not be talking about is clinical depression, clinical anxiety, or postpartum depression. I'm not qualified to talk about that. But more importantly, that's not what the topic is. We're talking about the changes that happen to us that are to be expected and fall within this normal range. And then lastly, I want to be very clear, most importantly, that I am pro-parenthood. What we're going to be talking about this morning is going to be a bit negative. We're going to be talking about the hardships and the sufferings that come with being a mother. But that does not equate to the fact that being a mother is bad or not worth it. I feel like being a mom is one of the greatest joys in life. I could go on and on about that. This is such a wonderful experience. However, it comes with hardship, right? And so just like if we were to prepare for a marathon, I think it's helpful to be aware of the difficulties that we are going to face. Years ago, I remember talking to this guy, a friend of mine, and it was the day of the Columbus City Marathon, and he was like, guess what? I quit smoking today, and I'm going to run the marathon next year. And he had never run. He had never exercised. And so we were talking about that, and he was like, you know, have you run a marathon? And so I was like, you know, no, I don't know if it's for me. The whole, like, your toenails falling off, nipples bleeding. And he was just like, what? And it became very clear that he didn't know anything that was going to happen by running a marathon. You know, and imagine preparing or running for a marathon and then having these crazy things happen to you. You would feel like, I don't know what's wrong with me. Surely I'm dying. My toenails are falling off. And in the same way, I think as mothers, a lot of people have avoided talking about these things because they feel like, oh, it's going to shine this negative light on motherhood. But in reality, I think it can be really helpful. Just like a marathoner has to plan how to when they're going to hydrate, at what mile they're going to take in extra calories, what they're going to do if they have to use the bathroom. There's big decisions to be made, right? As mothers, we can be intentional about how we're going to address these difficulties when they come into our lives. Okay, so these are two of the resources that I'm going to reference this morning. Mother Brain by Chelsea Conaboy, and then Mom Brain by Elise DeBrow DeMarco. Mom Brain is more of an easier read. It's written as a kind of a reference tool. Both of these are secular books. They're not Christian books. You might even say Mother Brain's an anti-Christian book. But they both have helpful things, I think, to offer on this topic. Okay, So I thought it'd be important for us to start simply by defining what do we mean when we're saying mother brain or mom brain. I want to look at this from two separate directions. The first being brain fog. Some people refer to this as baby brain. This is the mental fog or the inability to concentrate, you know, that general sense that my brain is not working like it used to. I might be dumber now that I'm pregnant or have a kid, right? There is this fog that comes with having children. And then secondly, we're going to talk about brain overload. Some people refer to this as mommy brain. And this is the mental overload that we experience as mothers when we try to remember 800 different practical things for our kids while dealing with the emotional toll involved with raising kids. So those are our two separate definitions. And what I want to do is kind of go through both, talk about what is actually happening in our brain, what's causing these, and then we're just going to go through three tips for how to cope. All right, brain fog. Historically, if you have looked up what's happening with my brain in pregnancy or early motherhood, what you would find, and what I found, I remember looking this up, what I found was the general statement, there are no significant cognitive declines found in pregnancy or postpartum. I found that to be a very frustrating response to my research, right? Because it did not line up with my experience. There's nothing significant happened. It felt like there's something very significant happening. Recently, somewhat recently, there's been new research that has actually identified very significant things that are changing in our brain. Now, it's important to note, too, that the hormonal dumps, or as the researchers refer to it as, the endocrine tsunami that we experience, in especially the third trimester and postpartum, is connected to decreased concentration, memory lapses, increased anxiety, and increased depression. So we know that that's a factor. However, more significantly, there's been this research that has identified actual brain changes in the third trimester and in postpartum. And it's by this Dr. Iseline Haxema. And so from what I found, most people are pointing to her research as this very significant new way we understand what's happening in mom's brains. What she did is she had 40 women that planned to become pregnant, and then 40 women that said they were not going to become pregnant. So she had these two groups, and she followed them all throughout. And she did MRI imaging. And so what she found is that there were changes so significant that her and her colleagues could look at MRI images and identify the brain of a woman who has been pregnant or has had a child in contrast to the brain of a woman who has not. And it was in 100% of the participants. In every single woman, they all had these changes. And so this is profound, right? And what she found specifically is that these changes were all in the same area, all in the hippocampus. And what they found was that there was a decrease in gray matter and an increase in function. So this stands in opposition to what they find in a degenerative brain disease. Okay, so in a degenerative brain disease, what they would find is a decrease in structure, so a loss in gray matter, but also a decrease in function. But here, what they're seeing is that there's less gray matter, but actually an increase in function, meaning when they studied these women, specifically interacting with their babies, that their brain was lit up more than ever before in this area of the hippocampus. And so what she theorized is that actually we are not becoming dumber, that our brain is specializing, and that what's happening is that we're not losing our cognitive ability, but rather our brain is remodeling itself to respond to our baby better than ever before. Now that resonates with me. Yeah, there is something different about my mind. And it makes a lot of sense too that we do have this sense that I'm dumber, right? Or I can't think correctly, because now our brain power is all going towards identifying our baby and their needs. the hippocampus is connected to social cues. And so what they're saying is that our brain is fixated on these social cues our baby is giving us. We're hyper alert to the fact that our baby is fussing or needs us in some way, and all of our brain power is going towards that. And so in the past, maybe our brain power was, our top priorities were memory, holding a conversation, concentration. Now, baby is at the top of our priority list, and those things have been put below. And so this is going to certainly contribute to our brain fog. Here's what Jody Paluski says about it. She's a top researcher in this field. She says it's a major event. It's one of the most significant biological events, I would say, that you have in your life. So many women feel changed by motherhood in ways that can be unsettling and confusing. Here was information that might provide comfort to some. In most cases, not only are these changes normal, they are also productive, helping women to become the parents that their babies need. Okay, so our first cause is these hormonal dumps and brain changes. The second is sleep deprivation. We could probably talk all morning about this. Obviously, this is probably going to be the most sleep-deprived experience of many of our lives, right? We know that sleep deprivation has a negative impact on our ability to remember things, concentrate, even on mental stability, that when we are sleep deprived, our anxiety is going to be higher, chances of depression are going to be higher. It's important to note, this is a form of torture, right? This is something that's used as torture. This is not some insignificant thing. Going through this major sleep deprivation is a big deal. And then lastly, our third cause I'm calling just general disorientation. As we become mothers, there is a type of a loss of a sense of self. We are changing, not just in this small brain area, but really in who we are. In Hoxima's study, they've identified that those changes will last up to 2 years, this kind of hyper-specialization. But we know as mothers that when we become a mother, we're changed forever, right? Our perspective of the world has changed, our perspective of people. You know, in large part, we are becoming a completely new person. And this is disorienting, right? We're kind of functioning through the day. We're trying to deal with these brain changes. We're sleep deprived, but we also are adjusting how we view the world, how we view our lives. And so this is going to add to our brain fog. Here's what Chelsea Conaboy says in her book, Mother Brain. None of this, the all-consuming nature of it, the devastation that accompanied the joy, was how I had imagined it would be. Close friends who had young children reassured me that the early months were hard, that things would get better when the baby started sleeping more at night. But they never talked about this thing I felt that I couldn't quite name, a kind of untying. I think that's very well put. Again, she got a lot of pushback for her book and this article that she wrote for being overly negative. But I do think that there's validity to this concept, the fact that we feel very disoriented when we become mothers. Her book was kind of born out of this article that she wrote. And her thesis for both the article and her book is that this idea of the mother's instinct is a myth. And really that when she became a mother, she was so caught off guard with how disorienting and difficult the transition was that she was upset. You know, this idea that we are supposed to transition into motherhood and kind of slide into it naturally, she felt like was kind of messed up because it wasn't her experience whatsoever. It wasn't this natural transition, but rather a very difficult and life-altering one. It's funny because she points to this research, this new research, as evidence for that, that we are being changed in such a deep and profound way that it's even our brain is functioning differently. But the researchers point to these new findings and say that's the mother's instinct. And so they both have these kind of opposing views, right? Which is correct? I think they're both right. This is a difficult transition. It's disorienting, yet also we do have some help biologically. Our body is helping us through it to some extent. Okay, so that's brain fog. We're going to move on to brain overload. What causes this overload in our brain? First, quite frankly, it's just the practical responsibilities of being a mom. In DeMarco's book, she illustrates this concept by using a pie chart. And she says, this is what my brain looked like prior to having kids, that I have this pie chart and a huge percentage of it is devoted to work. 25% is to dinner ideas, 15% to my husband, extended family gets some, researching vacations and home decor all get some. And then she has this other pie chart that's just packed full of completely opposing priorities, that I have to remember to get water shoes for camp. I still have this job I have to worry about. We have to RSVP for a party. I have spaghetti sauce on my shirt. Is the guinea pig dead? We get the picture, right? I was just laughing with my friend. My good friend has just recently gave in to her family about getting a dog. And they got this, you know, beautiful purebred dog. And for some reason that's unclear to me, the dog can't get spayed. And so now she has this menstruating dog. She's got 3 kids, 2 jobs. She's very involved in her home church and her dog's on its period. You know, we all get it. We have experienced this overloaded brain. But I think what's more profound, we have a million things to remember, but what really sometimes puts us over the edge is the emotional toll of having children. What about fear? I think that some people have kind of touched on this, but you know, we see our kid do something, and just last week I was running with my daughter, which is not age appropriate. I still push her in the stroller, and she wants to talk to me the whole time. Running is my, like, I'm trying to shut down my brain, and she's trying to talk, and finally she goes, Mom, what do you think my brother would do if I killed his bunny? So I just stopped and was like, well, I guess we're talking now, you know. Who among us hasn't had a vision of the future sitting in a prison waiting room to visit their child, right? We have these fears. Is this behavior leading to incarceration or is it normal, right? I was sitting in a room of women just a couple weeks ago where everyone was talking about the amount of time they spend thinking about what would happen if they died from cancer? And not a single woman in this room had cancer, right? There's these catastrophic things we worry about that haven't even happened. There's a lot on our mind, and there's a lot of weight that we carry as mothers. So how do we cope with these things? There's a lot we could probably say this morning. We're going to focus just on these 3 tips to coping with mom brain, these 3 different checks we can do. And a lot of it comes from those books that I referenced. The first one is check in. In Conaboy's book, she really emphasizes this idea of mindfulness. And if you're like me, you might feel a little triggered by this word. I think it's maybe overused currently and not used correctly. But in her book, she's a psychologist, and she specializes in counseling mothers. And she uses both CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, and DBT, dialectical behavioral therapy. And a big emphasis on both is this idea of mindfulness, which is what she says is just pausing throughout the day and kind of checking in with ourselves. What am I actually feeling? What am I thinking? I think there's a lot of people of faith who kind of feel like this concept stands in opposition to Christianity. But I don't think so. I think that this is something that is really helpful for us as mothers. And we see it utilized in the Psalms, right? Where they say, you know, why am I downcast? What am I thinking right now? And as mothers, I think that there's a tendency for us to just plow through the day and try and get through it. And we aren't really thinking through what is it that's bothering me right now? What are all these complex emotions I'm trying to juggle? In dialectical behavioral therapy, there's an emphasis on this idea of accepting the things we cannot change, which sounds pretty simplistic, but I think that there's a lot of value to that, especially in early motherhood. You know, we're talking this morning about how we are changing in probably the most profound way we ever will when we become a mother. And there's a tendency, I do think, for a lot of moms to have this longing for how things used to be. That I can't wait until I get back to that time where I have this quiet time in the morning and things are calm and no one's screaming at me. And in large part, those days are gone. Our brain is different, you know, our priorities are different. And I think that, you know, accepting the fact that we are this new person, while that can be scary, I think that there's great value to us sitting in the fact that we are becoming a new person. And for those of us that do have faith in Christ, I think that we can face things like this with a hopefulness, right? If God has us here, if he has good things for us, then this new person must be better than the one I have this tendency to long for. In cognitive behavioral therapy, she advocates that we take adult timeouts. And it's funny because she says that by doing this, we're going to decrease the likelihood of having bedtime meltdowns, which is funny because babies have bedtime meltdowns, but I think moms do too. This tendency to plow through the day and take care of these 800 different things we have to take care of and just ignore all these emotions that we're having is not mentally healthy. She says that as moms, one thing we can do is set timers in our phone where we're just checking in. Okay, what is it that I'm thinking about right now? What am I worried about? What is at the top of my mind? Not necessarily judging whatever it is we're feeling, but just taking these timeouts to check in with ourselves. So that's our first tip, check in. The second tip is check up, in the sense like you go to the doctor to get a checkup. And, you know, while there are these biological things happening with us, things that we cannot change, there are ways that we can either help or hinder our minds, just like someone who has depression, you know, where there is a chemical imbalance. There are choices they can make to either help their depression or hinder it. And in the same way, we can do that. You know, we can do that physically, mentally, and spiritually. Physically, you know, again, we could spend a whole another hour just on this topic. You know, the idea of taking care of ourselves. Obviously, in the beginning, in early motherhood, our hands are tied to some extent. You know, the goal there is keeping the baby alive, taking a shower every once in a while, right? There's only so much we can do. But, you know, as our kids get older, sleep, exercise, and eating healthy are all going to have positive impacts, even on this brain fog, right? The more we prioritize sleep and exercise and eating healthy, the more we're going to be able to manage this brain state of brain fog. Mentally, almost every parenting book you'll read advocates that we as mothers schedule a light at the end of the tunnel, whether that's daily or weekly or monthly, that we, just like the marathon runner, has to schedule in the hydration and the calories, we need to prioritize whatever it is that's going to give us relief away from our children. So I think that this can actually be really reorienting when we feel like, I don't know who I am. You know, I feel like a robot functioning in this house. When we can get outside of, you know, away from our children, it can really reorient us and make us feel like, okay, you know, I'm thinking a little bit more straight now. Whether that's being with your friends, synchronized swimming, whatever your thing is, you got to schedule it in and work with your spouse that I've got to get something, you know, to refuel myself. DeMarco also talks a lot about social media restraint and fighting comparison with other moms. She actually has an entire chapter devoted to this. Social media and screens in general have been found very clearly, significantly increase anxiety, increase depression, They decrease our ability to concentrate. You know, all these things that are contributing to our brain fog. If we want to clear up our mind, this is one area that we can focus on in order to do that. Social media also increases our tendency to compare ourselves and to feel kind of more of that mom guilt. And also what happens is we add slices to our pie chart, right? When we're comparing ourselves to other moms. Here's what she says. Maternal comparison making is everywhere, as there's virtually no end to the mom to whom you can compare yourself. Friends, family members, acquaintances, acquaintances of acquaintances, random women on the internet. The topics available for comparison, how well you're balancing work and family, how put together you look, how involved you are in your kids' activities, where your kids are developmentally, and the venues that inspire comparison making. Preschool drop-off, birthday parties, soccer practices, and most insidiously, the internet. She goes on to say, research has shown that moms who engage in this type of social comparison feel more overwhelmed and depressed and less competent as parents than moms who don't. We all know what this is like, right? This is something that everyone falls into, that we're at the school drop-off and we see that one mom who's completely put together. Her kids are well behaved, they're dressed perfectly, and you somehow get a glimpse inside her van and it's clean. And you're looking at yourself and your kids look homeless. In my case, one of my kids is dressed ridiculously 100% of the time. And your van has raccoon paw prints on the inside of it because your kids never shut the door at night. And you just feel like, what am I doing? You know, I should be doing better. Why can't I be like this mom? You know, this adds to our pie chart and that feeling of being overwhelmed, the mom guilt. So DeMarco really says that one thing that we need to do is identify these thought patterns when they come up, and that often it can be kind of the sneaky thing that we don't realize we're doing. One phrase that she uses in her book is that when we're comparing ourselves, we're shoulding all over ourselves. Shoulding all over ourselves. That we're telling ourselves, my house should look better, right? My kids should behave better. They should dress better. I should look better. This baby weight should be off by now, right? So she says that a big way that she says that we can work against this is the concept of playing fair, and says that when we compare ourselves to other moms, often the most harsh comparisons are to people we don't know anything about. These random women on the internet or this woman in the drop-off line that we know nothing about. We don't know the fact that she has a live-in nanny in her house or unlimited funds to dress her children or debilitating anxiety that she doesn't sleep at night, right? We don't factor all these things in. We pick and choose these things and then make ourselves feel bad. And so that's a big way she says that we should combat this. I think that there's some validity to this argument or the idea that we should play fair and we should identify when we're not comparing appropriately. But in large part, this feels like treating the problem with the problem. That we should stop comparing or we should compare better, maybe. When I think, you know, we need to get at the root of the issue when we're comparing ourselves. When we're comparing ourselves, we're trying to answer these pretty deep questions within ourselves. Am I a good mom? What if I'm failing? What if I'm doing this wrong? What if I'm harming my children or doing the wrong thing? What makes me valuable? And, you know, so we need to find some source of stability that's outside of other people, that's outside of ourselves. And I don't know how you do that without God. And I think that this is the real profound message of the Bible, that we can actually face these scary questions like, am I failing my kid? And be okay with it. Ephesians 2, 8, and 9 says, for it is by grace you have been saved through faith. It's not from yourself. It is the gift of God, not by works, so that no one can boast. The whole message of the Bible, the whole story of Jesus coming is about this, the fact that we are imperfect and that we can be okay with this because God sent Jesus to sacrifice for these imperfections and for the failures that we have in our life. I think, too, it's worth noting that Paul's an excellent example. You know, in 2 Corinthians, Paul's put in that position where he's being compared to other people. And they're specifically laying out his weaknesses and trying to get him to respond. How are you going to handle this? And he says, 3 times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away, but he said, my grace is sufficient for you. My power works best in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weakness so that Christ's power may rest on me. As moms, I think this is something that we can consider, you know. We can face the fact that we aren't doing it 100% perfectly. Yes, there's raccoon paw prints on my dashboard. I don't have it all together, but that's okay, you know. God wants us to come to him imperfect. And so in large part, I think identifying this comparison and at the same time kind of refusing to engage in it, that this is something, I'm not going to play this game with myself. And God wants to bear this burden. You know, Lenore Skenazy, who wrote Free Range Kids, has a very interesting take on the fact that we are currently living in a culture that has more pressure to do things perfectly than ever before. I have a little clip of her talking about this.
I'm raging. Yeah. All right, so let me lay this on you. It's not that religion doesn't exist today. Obviously, it does. But it actually, this is the theory of Alan Levinowitz, who's a professor of religion at James Madison. He says that religion still influences our lives and our decisions, but an ever-shrinking sphere. So it used to be religion would decide what you were wearing and what you were saying and what you were reading and how you were raising your kids and what you were eating. I mean, it was like it covered everything. And now gradually, it's sort of just our spiritual life for many of us. And so that left this whole swath of life's decisions to us. Ah. And so we don't actually know what we're supposed to do. Nobody knows exactly what they're supposed to do as a parent. So we read all these magazines and we listen to the experts and we read the studies. And in a way, science has taken the place of the religion. Oh, I just read that you can't possibly use a plastic cup. It'll give them this. Or you can't possibly let their lunch heat up too much. They'll get bacteria or whatever. Everything is a study. And you're whipsawed because the studies come out and you have to do this and you have to do that. And the worst part about it is that if you think that there's God's plan, right, or somebody is watching over you, or fate is fickle, then if something bad happens, it's like it wasn't on you, right?
Right. It was God's plan, and we don't always understand God's plan.
Right. And so there's some sympathy, right? It's like, there, but for the grace of God, literally, go I, right? Yeah. I mean, it's not just an expression. But if it's all on you, then if something happens, it's immediately, well, she wasn't paying enough attention, or she, you know, it's all her fault. And the other thing that this professor said is that religions are smart enough to say that perfection is just not possible in this existence, right? So it's karma, we'll come back later, it's heaven or hell, it's judgment day. But if you think that perfection is yours to create here on earth, well, you are stuck trying to make every birthday the best birthday, trying to make every soccer game a winning game, which is why everybody's getting the trophy. Every car ride, you had a good talk and you really got someplace. And every song you sang along with, because that's the kind of family you are. Every day is Disney World. It's impossible. And yet that's what you're supposed to feel.
Yeah, I love this perspective. I think it's so right on. Lenore Skenazy is not a Christian by any means. But she's identifying the fact that because we have so much access to so many answers, that there is this pressure for us to feel like there's an answer to every problem I have. And so if I'm not doing it correctly, it's on me. And she's saying, you know, what a lot of the world is missing out on is this thing of the past where people used to be able to put faith in something outside of themselves. And so for us, for those of us who have faith in Christ, we have this massive advantage. Now, I am not at all saying that we should throw science away by any means. I think it's sweet and so interesting to look into science and try to get help in that area. But also, it's foolish to live under this idea that I am in control of everything. And if I do this perfectly, my kid's going to churn out. Because no matter how much information we have, we know that that's not correct, right? That we are not in control. And so we have this great advantage, and we have a God who's saying, I love your kid, and I'm in control, and we can put faith in that. And that's going to relieve a large amount of the burden that we have as mothers. Okay. Check up. Last one is spiritually. We want to check up spiritually. You know, we're checking in. We want to check up and make sure, you know, where are we at spiritually? This is a major part of our health and well-being. I guess the main thing I wanted to emphasize here is the concept of gratitude. And, you know, I don't want to be one of those old ladies that are saying, just love this baby time. It's going to fly by. I don't mean that. I don't mean, you know, just be so grateful that you have your baby. No, I think that this is a very difficult time. But we are told both in science and in the Bible that gratitude is something that reorients our mind. That during times when we feel foggy and confused and unsure which way is up, that practicing gratitude can reorient our mind and clear up that fog. So I have a lot we could say, but I want to move on. Okay, check in, check up, and then lastly, checklist. In DeMarco's book, she emphasizes the idea of value-based parenting. In the back of her book, she has a number of surveys that you can go through and kind of fill out. And the point of it is to figure out what are my top priorities. And so she has one for vacations. And it's kind of like, what do I value about vacation? Is our family the type of people that our vacation is all about rest and relaxation? Or do we want an adventure? She has one for your spiritual life. She has one for extended family. What role do you want extended family to have in your children's life and in your life? And so what this does is it helps us identify our core values. It helps us eliminate slices of our pie, so to speak. You know, when we can go through our checklist, is having the cleanest van, you know, my utmost priority? It's not, then I can take that out of my pie chart, right? So here's what she has for parenting values. She says, we know that different parents prioritize different things. What kind of parent do you want to be? What do you want your relationship with your kids to be about? What aspects of parenting are important to you? And then she has this long list of sample values: adventure, affection, authenticity, caring, connection, flexibility, open-mindedness, order, patience, reliability. And then she, with each of these surveys, she has sample value-based statements. I value being physically present for my children, or I value being a mindful parent who is tuned in to whatever my kids are doing. I value being the planner for my kids, managing their schedules. I value being a disciplinarian. It goes on and on. Again, she has one for spiritual values. If you consider yourself a spiritual person, here are some sample values. You know, your spirituality is a source of comfort, or maybe it's a community connection. You value contributing to your spiritual community. Her value-based statements for her spiritual survey are, I value being part of an organized religious community. I value being able to practice my religion on a regular basis. You get the idea here. You know, these going through your values specifically, and probably more importantly with your spouse, is going to help you address the issues that you identify when you check in, right? That the last 3 days when I've checked in with myself, I've been obsessing and overwhelmed with how outdated my kitchen is. And so you can talk this through with your spouse. Is having the perfect, most beautiful kitchen at the top of my priority list right now? If it's not, then I can move on and focus on the things that are. If the last week, every time you've checked in with yourself, you've been overwhelmed to the point that you're crying most of the time, you know, is being a mom that is sane at the top of your priority list? Most likely. So we can go through and address, okay, how can we eliminate some of these pieces of your pie? How can we prioritize the things that we want to prioritize as a family? I think that these things are great. I don't love her surveys specifically, but I think they're a great starting point to kind of think through what it looks like to identify your values as a family. I think this is sweet too, because it's another way we can combat comparison. When we're comparing, we're trying to make our pie chart look exactly like our friends. When I don't really think any of our pie charts should look the same. No, our family is not the same. You know, our interests are not the same. Our circumstances are not the same. And so in large part, you know, the things that are on our mind and our top priorities might be different and probably should be different. We shouldn't be copying somebody else's top priorities. Okay, I guess just to conclude, you know, I don't have a hack. I don't have a mom brain hack, unfortunately. I think this is a part of being a mom, is learning how to manage being overwhelmed and having this fog for some period of time. But I do think that we can be intentional, you know, like the marathon runner, and prepare and be able to manage this better. And I can't really think of a single thing that is more worth putting effort towards, right? It's better than running a marathon for sure. God, I am super thankful that I'm a mom and you've given me this blessing. I'm thankful for the character growth that comes along with it that has been mentioned this morning. And most of all, thankful for your grace. I know that I am not doing this perfectly, but you care about my kids and you care about me, and that you're gracious. So thank you for that. I pray just that, we could walk away with just one thing that you want us to focus on from this morning. Amen.